Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Dermot Sugru. How are you, Dermot?
I'm great. Great, Chris. Great to talk to you again.
Perfect. Last week, we spoke about Wisden's only uses about 20% of the facilities.
Yeah.
Is it only sparkling wines you guys are making there, or are you making the full gamut?
No. The whole winery is dedicated to sparkling wines, and specifically the Wisden Estate vineyards, which are planted at Findon, it's the dedication, the ambition is purely about making the highest possible quality sparkling wines. The vineyard is on pure chalk, absolutely 100% chalk, very thin topsoil consisting of flint, clay, and some silt. We've got 16 hectares, which is 6.5 hectares, which are planted there. Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier, mostly Chardonnay, tiny amount of Pinot Meunier, and a decent chunk of Pinot Noir. So that's the focus on our wines is obviously very, very important, but with the contract winemaking, something that's very, very beneficial is that there's very little pressure on us to release our wines too early, because we've got an income stream which is coming from the contract winemaking, so we can wait, and these wines need and deserve time in order to be able to show at their best. But we've got some extremely promising wines in the cellar at the moment, which I look forward to showing at places like this in the next year or two.
A lot of people normally in England, they release their wines a year, 18 months after production. They don't keep it for long periods of time. And the only exception really is Knightimber, who used to work for as well, where they keep the wines on the dead yeast for lees for quite a while. Mm. Is that a philosophy that you're bringing through to Winston?
Yeah, I think, it's horses for courses, really, because some wines are naturally very exuberant and you want to show them when they're young and when they're flourishing, it depends on the year, depends on the grape variety. But for the classic, in my view, classic sparkling wine that we can achieve in England, you need to give the wine a certain period of time on lees, because, if you disgorge a wine after 9 months, 12 months or something like this, the yeast is barely dead. You can actually taste the yeast, which is still alive in the wine, and you're not looking at very many bottle derived aromas. You're looking at the primary aromas and fermentation aromas, but not something very interesting or complex. When you can leave the wine for, say, 18 months, 2 years, 2.5, 3 years, then you start to move into different levels of autolysis, of lees aging, and a different depth of expression of the kind of quality you have in the wine in the first place. And I think this is very, very important. It's not the be all and end all, because of course if you leave wines too long on lees, they lose their freshness, they become tired, they're boring, they develop quite ploddy flavors if they've been on lees too long, and you really must avoid this type of thing. So I think the balance between the variety, the vintage, how much richness there is in the vintage in the first place, and aging capacity, and that amount of time on lees is a very, very important thing.
How you said that the flavor develops or changes as the wine ages or matures on the dead yeast. Can you just describe the different flavors as they move through the progression?
I think really you're looking at the wine having more depth, the wine developing a sense of broadness, and it's a textural change in the wine. This is why we need to start with quite a high level of acidity in the wine, because that acidity is always being counteracted by the increased texture, smooth texture that's happening in the wine. The acidity is decreasing anyway. I like to think of them as they're black, white, and grey flavors, really, that are developing from the breakdown of amino acids and proteins in the autolysis of the yeast going into the wine. And it's just giving really complexity, different nuance of flavor. We see some really nice, interesting flavors in some of the wines I was tasting here today, where you get like this shellfish aroma from autolysis. It's like the like when you scrape the inside of shellfish, get that quite often, and that can be very, very precise.
In quite a young wine?
No. We were talking about here 3-4 years on lees, which is, you know, something that's maybe not so typically evident. Yeah, it really does go into. It's like the wine moving through different gears over 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 years, and that's why it's a joy, and it's a necessity to actually follow the development of the wines quite closely, because they can surprise you, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things which contribute to the speed at which the wine develops. And ideally, you want it to be a slow evolution through the maturity process, you know, and that's why a cold or a cool and continuously cool cellar temperature is the best, so the wine doesn't age too quickly. When you can get autolysis, I mean, the most effective temperature for autolysis is actually 50 degrees centigrade, because that's when yeast is breaking down very, very well. But the difference of a wine which is aging really, really nicely at 11, 12 degrees centigrade and one which is, you know, 20 degrees centigrade during the summer and 5 during the winter is huge, because the one which is fluctuating wildly will develop lots and lots and lots of big, bold flavors very, very quickly, but won't have finesse and won't have aging potential.
You mentioned the texture changes. It's quite interesting, because one of the things that I've noticed is that champagne and traditional method sparkling wines, one of the flavors that get developed through the autolysis is umami, which you don't really taste. It's really hard to taste, but you know when you've got it. So I found it quite interesting that you said, oh, it's quite hard. It's more of a textural thing, because you can't. It's really hard to say what it tastes like. But you know when you haven't got it, and you know when you've got it.
Yeah. And it's really interesting, because you can pick up a lot on these type of flavors, umami and mineral flavors maybe as well, you know, when you're tasting the wines. Sans dosage, when you disgorge them without any added sugar, just to taste the wines and follow the progress of them, because there you see the bare wines, the wines are naked, if you like. You're not putting
before
in
dosage.
Any before dosage. Yeah, so this is how the wines are for the longest period of their evolution, between the bottling for the second fermentation and the riddling and disgorging. So there you're talking about your 18 months, 24, 3 years, etc. And very often then when it comes to this, the point of dosage, you can cover up a lot of these subtle and delicate flavors.
Oh, one last thing I just wanted to touch on is some of the wines from some producers, I won't name names, the wines can get quite marmitey over time.
Yeah.
Do you know what causes that? Because I associate it with wines on the lees for a long period of time.
I mean, Marmite is a yeast-derived product,
isn't it? Flavor.
Sure. So we can see the combination there. It's interesting, because this wide portfolio, if you like, or spectrum of flavors that you get from wine in contact with the yeast lees, the dead yeast, plus time. It's a function of those things. But we're also starting to realize now that it's the effect of oxygen has a huge effect on those three things. So inside a sparkling wine bottle, when it's on lees, you know, you don't have a cork, you've got a capsule, which is a steel capsule. And there's loss of CO2 throughout that process. There's also ingress of oxygen.
Yep.
So just like a fine bottle of claret or burgundy maturing in a cellar, there's a transfer of air going in through the cork. And this, it's been found with recent research, is actually having a far more profound effect on the yeast and the wine than was previously thought. It's a fascinating subject, and in the winery, there's a lot of experimentation and trials that we can do, just looking how different bottlings of the same wine can evolve over time, and with different closures allowing different passages of gas over time.
But you're not quite sure what causes that yeasty, marmitey.
Well, you can say that it's just the constant degradation and the autolysis, the breakdown of what is a complex structure in the wine, the yeast lees, the death of those, and it's the evolution of that with the wine going forward. So it's all the time it's throwing up lots of different flavors. In terms of biochemistry or biochemical, no, I'm not the person to ask.
Yeah. I just noticed some wines, like I've tasted quite old Krug before, and it was beautiful clean wine, and I've had wines that are maybe 4 years old from England, and some of them have been quite Marmite-y. Yeah. And so I'm not necessarily convinced it's a function of time, but I have no idea what's causing it, and I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it.
For me, sparkling wine is all about finesse and subtlety. If it's too overt, if it's too in your face, if it seems like it's a little bit overpowerful, then maybe it's not such a positive thing, you know?
I think we'll wrap it up there, Dermot. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chris.